Hello, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life.
Anxiety about imperfection. Not to be numb or uncaring, just simply without anxiety, accepting yourself just as you are. Body, with this appearance, these behaviors, these life circumstances. One of the most reassuring lines from the Zen tradition was written by Zen Master Dogen. And it goes like this: to be in harmony with the oneness of things is to be without anxiety about imperfection. Now, I love this teaching because it assumes imperfection. It assumes that these bodies and minds will be reactive, that will grasp and get attached, and that we'll be angry at times and fearful, and that we'll even hurt the beings that we love the most out of our fear and our confusion. It assumes imperfection and says what matters is how do we relate to that. There's a real sense of shame, and that shame ties us up in knots. And it gives rise to the most profound sense of self-aversion. And what this means is that for awakening beings of our time, people on the spiritual path, that paying attention to shame, paying attention to self-aversion, is a necessary gateway for awakening. It's not something to get rid of. Rather, the way we pay attention to self-aversion is actually the ground of the path.
Good morning and welcome to Live a Moment's Global Pause here on America Meditating Radio. We are so honored to be here creating these Monday morning moments for you to help us pause, which is what the Global Pause is about. Can we pause collectively at the beginning of our work week and just find our center? Remember best self versus self-interest before we get underway and let the week take us away into whatever it is that we do. Over the last couple of weeks, I have talked to many, many people. We've been working with a group of students who have been here in D.C. interviewing people about their state of peace. Yes, the State of the Union is about to happen, but how are we feeling? What is our state of peace? And how are we coming about peace? We often talk about 3 feet of peace here at Live a Moment, the concept of the 3 feet that surround you. That world peace may feel too big, but what about the 3 feet around you? Can you create a peaceful world there? And I spoke with a friend of mine who actually said, sometimes I get on the app and I don't feel peaceful. And is that okay? Is that okay to mark off that I am in fear or that I feel like I'm fighting for my peace in this given moment? And I think it's okay. I think it's important for us to recognize there are going to be moments that don't feel good to us, that we're really struggling through it. And sometimes we're in situations that just simply don't bring us peace. And how do we find our way back? And part of it is to be able to identify it and say, this is how I'm feeling in this moment. Because when we're at odds with how we feel, when we try to hide it, that creates more dissonance. And when you create more dissonance in your body, you're not going to be at peace. So in those moments of fear and being scared or uncertain, allow that in. Allow yourself to recognize in this moment something's up and breathe through it. And from there, oftentimes a greater sense of calm and peace comes in. Your nervous system relaxes knowing what that truth is for you in this given moment. So today we're going to sit back and listen to our welcome message, actually. It's on the app under stories. And it's about what if we can lean in and just for a moment, what if you were calm and I was calm and she was calm just for a moment? Could that change our attitude towards ourselves and towards each other? And may we all find a little bit more empathy and compassion towards each other in these moments when we struggle to find our center. Enjoy. What if you were calm and he was calm and she was calm? Just for a moment. This is the power of one collectively. Peace can come in any moment and happen with every choice. May your next choice bring you peace. Then may you bring your peace to the world. Because sometimes all it takes is just a moment.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to America Meditating Radio. I'm your host, Sister Jenna. The life here in the nation's capital continues to be heated with the competition of who has the greatest egos. And I say that with all empathy and compassion because neither one of us on the planet is void of this energy that makes living quite intriguing, to say the least. But really, this morning in my meditation when I woke up, I just had to keep sending these pure feelings to everyone. Everyone. The ones that are struggling with the attachment to an idea or the way that something should be at the price of somebody else's suffering. And those who maybe are even attached to what they believe is the right thing to do, and at the price of another form of suffering. It's so intriguing, the times that we're in. It's as if we've lost insight of who we are as source children of this living energy. And at what point will we recognize that this is all a game of the ego, the attachment to identities and forms and shapes and ideas and thoughts that aren't really who we are as energy, as souls, as human beings on the planet, who are actually supposed to help each other. And during moments of crisis, we don't turn our backs on anyone who is suffering just because of their religious beliefs or their color or this or that. We try to help each other. And perhaps because we're in a little bit of our comforts right now, we forget that we're actually here to co-create, to celebrate, to honor. And so I'd like us to just take a moment of pause and just send our pure feelings to members on the Hill, members at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, to our family members, to our cities, to those who are just living on the streets in the midst of a really cold winter. I want you to increase your empathy and think, what would it feel like if it was you in that position? What would you want from another person? How would you think? How would you feel? It's such a challenging time to be a parent in this age and generation, because education is one thing, and we're totally in the age of technology now, which is not the age I went to school with. And in the age of technology, there are different ways of now moving things, but at the end of the day, real business and real collaboration just happens between two human beings and how they treat one another and how they care for one another. And so to what extent are we able to really improve our education and leadership? And today we have author Karen Gross, who is a native Washingtonian here, as well as Vermont-based advisor and consultant to nonprofit schools, organizations, and even governments. She was president of Southern Vermont College and has served as a senior policy advisor to the United States Department of Education and as a tenured law professor for 22 years. Karen has also authored books for both adults and children, including Breakaway Learners and Kid Books by Karen. Karen speaks, advises, and consults on students' successes, improving educational leadership, and handling even educational crisis. She must be very busy right now. To that end, she serves as senior counsel to the Finn Partners and is a visiting teacher at Molly Stark Elementary School in Vermont and an affiliate of the Penn Center for Minority Serving Institution. Today, we welcome Karen Gross to the America Meditating Radio. Karen, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning. I'm honored to be with you.
Same here. There's a lot of changes. To what extent do you feel that you are challenged to see how should be the course of education in these times?
Well, I think in your prologue, you raised a number of very important questions about the problems that we face in our schools and in our government. And for me, one of the most critical issues is that if we don't address educational change now, we will have an intergenerational problem that will stay with us. So the goal is to do things today to help the generation that will be our leaders 10 and 20 years from now. So the answer to your question is I'm trying very hard, particularly in the early grades, to make changes to institutions and the people within those institutions so students can succeed.
So could you share what are some of those changes that you're making so far so our listeners can get an idea?
Sure. Well, let's start with this observation. There are many students in our schools across the educational pipeline who have been traumatized and who suffer from trauma. And yet, we have remarkably few trauma-trained educators and trauma-sensitive schools. And what we know is that if you've been traumatized early, and that's from age zero all the way forward, and that is not ameliorated, you carry your trauma with you like a suitcase through life. And so we need more training so so that schools become trauma sensitive, teachers are aware of the indicia of trauma in children, and that we allow children who have been traumatized to flourish if we can put into place the right interventions. That's an example of a change I'm trying to institute.
Now, have you noticed that the numbers of children being traumatized increasing tremendously in this particular generation? Because I would think that as we become, quote unquote, more civilized, that it's less.
Sadly, the answer is yes. And I actually have a forthcoming book where I name this generation Gen T, with a big T for big T trauma and a small T for little T trauma, both of which are significant. So big T traumas, national disasters, whether person-made or nature-made, and small T trauma is everything from abuse within the household, toxic stress, homelessness, food scarcity, divorce, separation, death, illness, and an increasing number of children, sadly, are experiencing either or both big T and little T trauma.
Oh, wow. It's funny, you know, Karen, because my mother was traumatized when she was young, seven years old, I think. She was orphaned. And coming from a developing country where there's no one to talk to, no authority you can trust, not only does she take the baggage of trauma, but it's just a shadow travels with her without her even knowing.
I think that's accurate. But there's also some more to it that we have uncovered with neurobiology and neurochemistry. And one of the things that we've discovered is that early childhood trauma changes the brain and its development. It actually changes the hard wiring. And so if there aren't interventions, that trauma can keep getting reactivated. And so there's a new trauma and then a reactivation of the old trauma. And so the suitcase of trauma actually grows in size for some people as they progress through time. And the other scientific development that's well worth noting, apropos of your story about your mother, is that there's the epigenetic transmission of trauma, so that there is an increasing literature suggesting that trauma is transmitted through generations, from one traumatized generation to the next. So cultures that have suffered trauma, like Native Americans or African Americans in this country, or Holocaust survivors, actually pass along a proclivity towards trauma that's epigenetically transmitted into the next generation.
We have heard of that very much. The Gen T culture right now, or generation, what is the predominant age group that you're recognizing that children are really struggling internally?
So I wish I could tell you that it was a single age group that's struggling with trauma. Unfortunately, I think it is across our entire educational pipeline, from very early childhood all the way through college and adulthood, including into the workplace. So you can see trauma in college students who are now of varying ages and stages. You can see it in high school. You can see it in middle school, elementary school, preschool, and even early childhood education. And I should add that one of the reasons, and I think the question I'm asked most frequently, is why would a college president now be writing children's books? And the answer is, well, there are several answers, but the main answer is that if you really want to change education, you have to start early and often. And what better way to do that than through introducing children to literature that addresses trauma without, quote, labeling it or labeling the child. And so I've been able to read to literally thousands of children the books that I've written and to help those children engage in ways that will enable them or encourage them or foster their success.
Helping the teachers, by the way. Yes, well, let's talk about the books because you have Breakaway Learners and you've authored books for children and adults because I guess you can teach the children as much as you can, but if they go home and they bump into the behavior that you're trying to, you know, tell them this isn't the way to be, it becomes really confusing for the child, doesn't it?
Yes, and it's not only for the child, it's also true for college students. College students struggle with the difference in culture between the college where they're attending and their home environment. And that clash creates a real difficulty where they actually have to break away, and thus the title, Breakaway Learners. So that book is about how you can enable student success across the educational pipeline for breakaway learners by focusing on students who succeeded, not those who failed. In other words, we currently operate from what I call a deficit model. We ask, what's wrong with these children? Why can't they do this? Why don't they look like the children who were here before? And I suggest that's not the right starting point. You have to start with a positive, not deficit model. And you have to focus on the strengths of students in college, high school, middle school, elementary school, all the way back to early childhood. So the adult book that deals with this is Breakaway Learners. But then I have a series of children's books in both English and Spanish that try to help children and that are readers of those books to them, believe in the power of the possible, to dream big, to appreciate that you can overcome obstacles, that there are pathways that are creative and bold that enable you to problem solve so that you can progress without impediment or with less impediment than otherwise was there. And so the series that does that is called Lady Lucy's Quest, which is about a little girl who wants to be a knight in the Middle Ages. And she's told, no, 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 girls can't be knights. And she says, wait a minute, where does it say that? I should be able to be a knight. And so the series is about her becoming a knight and then the quests that she goes on as a knight.
That's such a beautiful story. And you also talk about elasticity, in which I'd love if you could explain more to that, because, Karen, we are in a completely different age of living. And I think this generation of us, aren't we kind of acclimating or setting the tone for another paradigm of living as a generation for the future to come?
The short answer is yes, we are living in different times, which is why we need different strategies. So I was often asked as a college president by faculty, get me better students. And I would say, no. No, these are the students that we have. You need to find better ways to teach them.
Yes.
You need to think differently about what it means to be an educator in today's world. Because if you only want to teach people who look like you, that's not going to happen. At least it is not going to happen at the vast majority of colleges and universities in the United States. And so I developed a concept based on a made-up word because the world has changed and the existing vocabulary doesn't describe what really is needed. And the word that I created is elasticity, which is really a combination of elastic, plastic, and lastic, as in lasting.
That
and
must have emerged in your 3 o'clock meditation. It just had to come up at that time.
Yes, that's one of those things that just emerges, right? Yes, this is... and elasticity actually is a process. It's not a fixed notion. That already changes how it operates. We tend historically to have endpoints, and this concept is a process that allows one to understand what features, what variables go into enabling student success in today's world. In other words, you want to be elastic. You want to develop a elastic generation. You want to develop people who appreciate elasticity. So one way of thinking about it is like a mobile, where all 5 central features of elasticity are floating in the air and they intersect in different ways at different times. So I'd be happy to explain elasticity to you and to your listeners, but one of its central features is reciprocity. The key to student success, well, there are several, but one key is reciprocity, which means that there has to be engagement between a student and ideally an adult. It could be a parent, but it's often a teacher or other mentor who can listen, truly listen to that child and engage with him or her and believe in that child and their capacity to succeed. If you don't have reciprocity, it is nearly impossible to progress through the educational pipeline successfully. Now, having said that, many adults don't see that as their role. They see their role as delivering content. Many teachers, particularly as you move up the educational pipeline, think their job as an educator is to provide content. And content is important. I don't deny that. But if you don't have psychological readiness, and if you don't have openness to content, and if you aren't in a place to learn, all the content in the world won't be absorbed. And if you look at this in younger children, you can have the best reading teacher in America teaching young children to read, but if the children are hungry or the children are sleep deprived or the children have witnessed abuse, learning will not happen.
Yes,
and
I agree.
So elasticity is a concept that recognizes that you need to create the soil, in essence, in which learning can transpire. And it gives people the strategies to enable that learning to happen. And I'd have to say, at the end of the day, shouldn't we all want that learning to happen? And some people say, oh, you know, you're being soft on kids, you're giving them too much. And you're being a snowflake, I'm often accused of being, which is ironic since I, you know, live in Vermont part of the time. But what I would say to you is, actually, I'm complimented to be a snowflake.
I think so. I think you're a great balance, Karen, actually. Talking to you, you're a great balance.
Thank you. Coming from you, that's an extraordinary compliment.
But you are a balance.
The effort with children has to be, it needs to be one that is recognizing the difference between children today and children of decades below, and it has to be one where we say, it doesn't matter how much we help them. The question is, can we put them in a position to succeed? Do we care how they succeed as long as they get there? The answer should be no. Whatever it takes, we should do that.
Yes. Now, do you think that love plays a very big role? Because elasticity sounds like it's rooted in the quality of love. And, you know, they always say when we feel loved, we're definitely more open versus when we don't feel that love, we just can't receive anything that takes us closer to love. So would you say that the whole notion of elasticity is rooted in that energy? That's what I'm picking up, because it would be an act of love more if I'm applying my elasticity on myself.
So I worry a little bit about the definition of the word love for many reasons. I would say what elasticity rests on is empathy and caring and respect for the other. Now, some people might define that as love, but I would say that what teachers and adults and mentors and parents need to demonstrate for and to their children, not just in words, but in deeds, actions, that they respect them, listen to them, care about them, and foster the positive skills that they have. Sadly, we often focus on the negative in kids, what they can't do, where they're not excelling, and we give them more courses and more tutoring and after-school programs. I actually think that's all wrong. We should look at what they can do successfully and have them do more of that. And the more of whatever that is, the more they'll be able to fill those deficits and start to do more in the other areas. And that's because education is about risk-taking. Learning is not easy. You have to be willing to be open to trying something and not succeeding at it the first few times and struggling. Mm-hmm. Learning to read is taking a risk. Doing math problems where you may not get them right is a risk. Reflecting on history, writing stories, reading books, they're all at some level about risk. But to be able to take risk, you have to be in an environment that is positive, that encourages success, that recognizes that failure is inevitable and not the end of the earth. And you need teachers and parents and adults who can empathize with and listen well to the students they teach and mentor.
Which can be very rare find nowadays. I find that sometimes, Karen, a rare find nowadays. I think it just could be me in the business that I'm in. It's just that we want to be our best, but we're so inundated with life's unfolding in our lives, and there's just such a weight within the spirit that we're really having to dig deeper in order to offer more of ourselves. And I'm very hopeful, and I'm so glad that you're doing the work that you're doing. I understand that you'll be a presenter at the second annual National Conference for Creating Trauma-Sensitive Schools here in the nation's capital. Would you like to tell our listeners about the conference and what you'll be discussing?
Sure, I'd be delighted to. This is the second annual conference where educators, both teachers and administrators and others involved in education are gathering to try to outline and understand and teach about what are the things that we need to create the schools in which our students will thrive. And in particular, and by the way, there are, I think, 1,500 people registered for this conference, which is a lot for a conference related to education. And the topic I will be speaking about is how do you reopen schools after there's been a natural or human disaster? So this is a really critical question because lots of schools are getting closed because of storms or floods or fires or shooters or any number of disastrous events. And what people have to realize is you don't just open the school door, assuming the school is still there, and say, where were we before we were so rudely interrupted 2 weeks ago? or 4 weeks ago and just pick up where you left off. That's not how it works. You have to reopen schools thoughtfully and sensitively. And the workshop I'm doing is a set of tips and strategies that I'm actually trying out with the teachers and administrators so that they can deploy them based on having tried them out themselves to see that they work.
Wow, that's important. Thank you. Thank you for that topic, because I wouldn't even know where to begin with that one, Karen. The trauma that kids are going through with school shootings, natural calamities, just there's a lot more on their plate. And so how do we address that? And even what we're watching in the media nowadays, where do we even teach moral and ethics anymore when everything is so gray?
Well, that's a complicated question.
Start with this.
Social media is not helping.
Yeah.
Right? Social media repeats trauma so that you can see it and hear about it and read about it every minute of every day. So to the extent that one's attuned to trauma or has had a traumatic experience, every time it shows up again and again and again, it reactivates the autonomic nervous system and pulls back in time traumas that you've had and moves them forward. So in this sense, while I appreciate the idea of transparency and knowledge, the social media attention to traumatic events needs an educator who can help students process what's happening in our complex world. And by the way, silence is not a response. Ignoring what's happened is not a response.
Yeah.
But you need to be educated in disaster relief and trauma sensitivity to be able to handle the students that one has. Let me give you just one example. I went to a school, I try to go to as many low-income, low-performing schools as I can, although I also go to some high-performing schools, and I have to say they have the issues there too. But I was at one particular low-performing school, and in every class where I read and worked with children, there were students who were asleep at their desk. Some were leaning against an adult. Some just had their head down. And one of the things that happens if you now move forward to college, if a professor sees a student fall asleep in class, the professor gets personally affronted and says, well, you know, you're not paying attention to my pithy words of knowledge. Like, what's wrong with you? Were you out partying last night? I mean, did you have too much to drink? Instead of asking the why question, so how about asking the older student, you seem tired. Is there something going on that I can help you with? Mm-hmm. And with the younger children, what you see is don't punish the child. The child can't learn because he or she hasn't slept. Maybe there was fighting at home. Maybe there was shooting in the street. Maybe they have no bed. So if we don't ask the why question about behavior, we'll never be able to resolve what's going on across education. So ask the why question, not in front of a huge group, not in an embarrassing way, but in an empathetic, caring way. Share with me what's going on.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. It's interesting that as teachers, everybody has to readjust and learn too for themselves in order to break the mold. It's an opportunity for everyone across the board, really.
Yeah, you're making a really good point. The teachers have to change. They have to change both their expectations of students, their understanding of who their students are, and then the ways to respond to those students. That's not easy. That's a paradigm shift on many levels. And by the way, it turns out that it's way easier for teachers in the lower grades to do this than professors within the academy who have a very hard time with change and changing roles. Early educators are better at this, and so are early childhood administrators, who are often way more engaged with the students they serve than our college and university presidents.
Amazing. Well, you know, in the conversation of education, literacy, government, all of that can make us a little bit heavy. Like people can say, oh, gosh, you guys really need to get a life. Where's the laughter here? And I want to go back to a part of our discussion about Lady Lucy, which is a character that was inspired by some of your writings. You discuss a part in there that says laugh to learn concept, which is behind the Lady Lucy Laugh Giraffe adventure. Could you tell us more about that? Because one of the things I love to do, Karen, is laugh. In the midst of my role of changing the world, please let me laugh my way through changing this role, girl. It is way too heavy. So
okay,
tell me about Lady Lucy.
Okay, so we view education as a really serious subject, and that learning only happens when you sort of put yourself through the paces and get serious. And actually, I don't think that's true at all. I think you can learn through humor, you can learn through laughter, you can learn through fun, and you can learn through games. And that's not just true in early childhood, it is true throughout education. And sadly, many people measure the quality of a school by how much, quote, academic strength they have. I would ask, how much strength do they have in areas that encourage creativity and imagination and body movement and humor? And so out of all of that, one of the Lady Lucy books is a joke book, really. And it's about giraffes, who the serious part of which is that they face extinction. And it's a serious effort to recognize that. But it's also a humorous effort to tell jokes about giraffes, to show children things like wordplay and creativity and plays on words, and enable them to be creative and actually tell jokes to others, write jokes about other creatures. And so Lady Lucy's Laugh Giraffe journey is filled with laughter and humor, and it's a book that works when kids travel with their families. It works in schools. I have taught the book with children. In fact, many of the jokes have been crafted with children and vetted by children. So I firmly believe that the seriousness of education has made it harder, not easier, for us to acquire knowledge and the skills that make us ready for the workforce, which is problem solving, engagement, capacity to learn and enjoy new material. All of that is tied to humor and fun that can occur through learning.
Lovely. It would be nice for us to have a ha-ha yoga day at every school, where in every classroom, the kids and the teachers just start off with a great hearty laugh and end the class with a moment of silence of good wishes for humanity and go to their next classroom.
A joke book is a real book, right?
Mm-hmm,
it's not a joke. You can learn a lot by telling and writing and listening to jokes. You can learn about language. You can learn about how words work. You can learn about facts. You can use jokes in many ways, but the learning doesn't feel so heavy and so burdensome. And by the way, games are another way to learn. And I just want to point out to your listeners that we often push for early reading and early academics and 1, 2, and 3-year-olds. And I would tell you, real learning can come from fun and play. It can come from reading books and talking about the stories in the books and playing out the games from the books. So if there's a book on hide and seek, You can play it when you read it, but then you can go play it in your home. And real learning, object constancy, attachment theory, word development, creativity, innovation can all come through play and games. Let's not forget those.
Well, you've got my vote on that one because I'm a firm believer of that. I think it's really important for us to be a little bit lighter. Karen, can I tell you that as I come to an end of our conversation, I felt like I would rather have moments with you where we could really sit and have really deep heart-to-heart conversations, which didn't have to be timed in 30 minutes or less. And,
I'd like that.
Me too. Thanks for your work. I can't wait to sink deeper into Breakaway Learners and the kids' book that you wrote, as well as learn more about just you. And I'd like if you could leave us with a website that our listeners can get a hold of. And when you're in D.C., just come by the Meditation Museum. Let's have some tea and talk more about what we can do together.
Well, I'd like that. I'd like to get together. That would be a privilege. And I actually think maybe there are ways the work you're doing and the work I'm doing could be synergistic. So
absolutely,
I would welcome that. The children's book website is www.LadyLucy'sQuest.com. But there is also another website, which is KidBooksByKaren.com. So both of them work, LadyLucy'sQuest.com and KidBooksByKaren. There's also a website for Breakaway Learners, which is BreakawayLearners.com, all one word.
Great. Well, Karen Gross, thank you so much.
And I look forward to meeting you and talking to you more.
Same here, and good luck on the conference that's coming up in D.C., and I'm sure it's going to be incredible what you'll be sharing with the audience, and lots of good wishes, and I'm hopeful that education will become a more holistic experience for the generations that are coming behind me.
I do, too. Until the next time.
Same here. Have a great 2019. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So I totally agree with Karen because there are new ways now that we've got to step into. Things are not the same. We're not the same people. We cannot learn the same way. You know, in my spiritual community, I find myself encountering the same experience where I value the energy of tradition and I want that tradition to stay there because there's something very powerful in it, which my generation just don't have it, and the ones after me maybe will never have it. But the point that I'm making is how do we integrate it all where it becomes holistic? And I think that is true for every sector. Politics is changing. Government is changing. Science is changing. And the way we teach must change. The way we teach must change. And also the way we handle ourselves and interpret ourselves also is on the horizon for change. Thank you for joining us today. Remember, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. And we really are here to love each other the same. So let us do that and shine our light so bright that'll inspire others to shine just as brighty as well. Here's Marla Maples, The Pearl.
Eternity.
I'd like to bring to everyone's attention Sacred Space in Sacramento, California, in which it's been opened up by Elaine Whitefeather and her foundation. Please take a listen.
Sacred Space is a safe space drop-in center for youth seeking a place to be, to find a short refuge from violence or an abusive environment, to find loving kindness, compassion, and to experience the creative medicine of art and expression. It is a place of the heart and soul awakening. Sacred Space in Sacramento, California, an innovative program by our community, all for one and one for all.
I'm Sister Jenna. You've been listening to America Meditating Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Did you enjoy that conversation? Because you can also listen to it on Spotify or in iTunes, 24/7, anytime, anywhere. I do trust we all have inner power to become our very best. When we listen with curiosity to learn more, we grow. So thanks so much for tuning in, and do be easy on yourself. Take care.